Thank you. All right, we're into our fifth lecture here on clearing, and the title of this lecture is Clearing Practice Of. Now, once upon a time, there was a little Satan. And he was just going along a time track, just having a good time. And he was making postulates, and he was buying postulates, and he was selling postulates. And he thought a lot of things were an awfully good joke, you know. And he didn't ever figure anything could ever have any effect on him. Could have a lot of effect on other people, you see, but not on him. And then one day somebody sold him on the idea that it would be an awfully good thing if he got certain effects. And he'd say, is that so? So he got the idea that of a game in which he could withstand various effects. Various effects couldn't have any effect on him at all. And he went around proving this to everybody. He'd get under big electronic machines and have glare fights and build machines and I'll just have a good time of it, you know, and just bang the energy around and the masses around and build up universes and blow them up and fix up galaxies and take them apart and build new forms that were supposed to go along the line a long time. And he had a ball. He had a ball. There's no doubt about this, having a ball. But one day, way up the track, He says, don't look now, but what am I doing here? He said, let's see, who am I? Let's see, just don't tell me. I think I can remember. Let's see, who am I? And where is this place? And, ouch! And, lumbosis, what's that? Ouch! And, I remember an old religion that said something about love thy neighbor. Let's see, I'm a neighbor of yours, therefore you should love... Ouch! And everywhere he looked, and everything he got into, was commodiously occupied with trouble, distress, and disaster. And it was perfectly all right to tell him, well, you couldn't possibly hurt because you got into all of this yourself, because he did hurt. And it was perfectly all right to say, well, you just got here by your own nonsense and stupidity and pig-headedness and lack of brotherly lovishness and so forth. It's all right to tell him that, but he had gotten there, whatever had brought him to that point. And did no good at all while he was being lugged into a hospital on a stretcher to say, you shouldn't have done that. Didn't make him well. And a lot of teachers came around and prophets and things like this. And they all had each one a bill of goods. It said right there, goods, a bill of. And they said, for a sixpence, or a buck, or a drachme, or a rupiat, I'll give you a terrific panacea, which will cure all of your difficulties. And all you've got to do in return for all this is merely be a total effect. You just guarantee to be a total effect, and all of your illnesses are cured. And he said, hurrah, three cheers. All of my illnesses will be cured, and that's all set. I'm all set now. And then he woke up in another place and said, where am I? Who am I? And where are my drachmes and bucks and sixpences and rupiats? And After a while, he even got gun-shy of getting well. He got to a point where anybody walk up to him and say, well, if you do this, some of these aches and pains will drop off. He'd say, I've heard that before. I've heard that before. I've been every place and done everything, and I've experienced everything, and there's nothing new any place, and what I know best is I had better not even try to get over what ails me, because it always costs me sixpences, bucks, drachmes, and rupiahs, and I always wind up behind a new eight ball. And so we come to present time. And that's the story of the little Thetan. The final knee plus ultra operation was to teach him, by giving him phony cures continually, that no cure was possible, that nothing could have any beneficial effect on him, and that he would just keep on going down. So we find our PCs. Now we walk up to him and we say, here, our son, or girl, sit down there, and we'll run a little bit of this and that and try to straighten you out and get some of your ideas sorted out and get you all straightened out one way or the other. And I've heard that before. I've heard that before. And I always wind up in an electric shock machine or in a penal colony on drachme or something bad happens every time somebody says he's going to help me. And you are up against, at this moment, not so much the straightening out of cases in the practice of clearing, but trying to straighten out a nearly final attitude of mind that there is no hope and nothing whatsoever can be done for anybody. And that if you try to do something for somebody, that simply proves conclusively that you are a very evil fellow. Now, that frame of mind is cured and is curable by a little old process that we know as help. And if you think this process has dropped out of your basket of tricks, you just better remember this is the only known process or process that can fish into participation a very reluctant preclear. Help. Once upon a time, an old-time well-known auditor didn't happen to have a PC one particular day at the same time that a drunken bum, an utter tramp, a perfect model of the proper target for the welfare state. Didn't have anything to do at all. Had it done for him, you know. And so nobody could help him, and there wasn't any help possible. That was nonsense anyway. And he happened to be in my office, so I shoved him up into an auditing session, and I told this famous old auditor, I said, now, why don't you give help a good run, because here we have the PC who will not stand still, who is a borderline psychotic, couldn't possibly be helped, and is going down for the 39th time. Now, how about getting him into session, just spend some time getting him into session? Well, this old auditor started in with help on just one question, trying to get just one question answered. And 2 or 3 hours later, he had gotten the question answered. And that was, how could you help me? Just that one question. He just kept repeating it in various ways as a repetition of the same question until he did get it answered. And you never heard so much balderdash, because I had him on the squawk box, You never heard so much balderdash come out of a PC in your life. But he finally wound up and opined that the auditor could actually help him. Now, the method of helping him seems rather obscure to thee and me, but he and the auditor could go out and find call of girls, and they could get a couple of bottles of scotch, and the auditor could help if he drank it. And this, he sincerely concluded, was actual assistance. Now, that's pretty far gone. But old grandma who sits there while you're trying to audit her 35-year-old daughter and says, well, I don't know anything about this stuff. You shouldn't be doing anything about this. Has only got one point to crack, and that is help. Some point of the help bracket, repeated often enough with grandma, would get her to finally sit still. But oddly enough, she will actually sit still most of the time while you're trying to put that one question. It's a good pinner downer. It involves the person's attention. And they can concentrate on this when they can concentrate on nothing else, because prevention of help is the button which forbids them from being helped, and you're exercising the button all the time you're trying to enter the case, and that is the button on which the case can be entered. Now, there is the bulk of the human race. The unconscious person, is a special case, merely that. The person who is psychotic is just another special case. The person who is ravingly psychotic and we can't get in any communication with at all is simply a special case. This is not a broad case, and actually the use of the word psychotic itself is a misnomer. A person can go around the bend at almost any level. It doesn't denote anything except intense dispersal or intense fixation. And the duration of the intense dispersal or the duration of the intense fixation establishes whether or not they are momentary or chronic psychotics. And we have where time enters into the thing. As the sole criterion, we actually don't have much right, you see, to make too much adjudication on it. But if their attention has been consistently and continually fixed or dispersed over a period of years so as to render them consistently and continually under the hands of, let us say, mental practitioners of the hospital type, we possibly then could have a classification for that person which we call psychotic. Consistent and continual fixation or dispersal. Now we have to establish the degree of fixation or the degree of dispersal, and we would have to fix it at a point which renders them wholly out of communication with the Scientologist. No point of entrance. That's actually, as a technical workaday, not a registrar's definition. Registrar has different definitions for a psychotic. They are based on the case behavior as it can be predicted under auditing, the case that will cause the organization trouble and so forth. We broadly call those psychotic for the registrar, but it's actually not technically accurate. A psychotic would have to have his attention so fixed and his attention so dispersed with a record of its having been so for so long that moment of communication with the practitioner is unlikely. And that we could call a psychotic. That actually narrows down the number of cases in institutions to some small fraction of those actually in institutions. It's a small fraction. But this case is, for all our purposes, merely somewhat more violent than the other quiet unconscious case. And they are both handled in the same way. And for those cases, we have the process, oh, you make that body lie in that bed, getting them something they can do, or CCH 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever they can take. And that worked on the unconscious or the psychotic person within the technical definition I've just given you. Generally causes a, well, has, so far, produced a release from that state of dispersal or state of fixation. Very interesting that failures along this line, just as length of time, how long have they been that way, or how often and how long have they been that way, fixes the definition psychotic if it is a long time. You see, they have to have been like this for quite a while to call this really a psychotic. Just as that is the case, so is the cure, quote-unquote, of it, a question of time. Question of time, long time. Runs anywhere from... Oh, I don't know. I never saw one get better in under 60 hours. The longest run on the CCH's addressed to a psychotic was 600 hours. It's a question of what are you willing to give? Now, those that become violent in session or momentarily violent in session and so forth... These people are not classifiable as psychotic and are actually not outside the bounds of the practitioner to handle and control. But, the psychotic and the unconscious person, I'm talking about the true psychotic, you see, under that exact technical definition, and the unconscious person do not form a majority of the existing Earth population. It's a very small number. Well, both of them are a problem of how much time can an individual practitioner afford to spend with them? How much economic expenditure can the society afford in order to cope with them? It is not a question of humanity. It is simply a question of expediency or time. Actually, if you had to invest 500 hours per psychotic in the society, you'd find this just in terms of expenses, maintenance, housing, upkeep, and a few other things, practitioner time, numbers of practitioner training time, and so forth, would add up to a very tidy sum, which, if expended in other directions, would bring about a great deal more ability. Now, we realize that most psychotics go psychotic by association with people who are not really psychotic, but are just act consistently in aberrated fashions, you'd actually be doing the psychotics more good to clean up the bulk of the people who operated in an aberrated fashion, rather obvious, economically. There's an economic problem rather than a problem in humanitarianism. And anytime you get psychosis and humanitarianism mixed up, you're going to get your silly head knocked off, and that's for sure. Because there's nothing humanitarian about a psychotic. His first impulse is to kill you real dead. Now, it's all very well. He does it because of his own survival. He, a bedpost, has to survive, and you're liable to pull out a whittling a knife or instrument, and carve your initials in him. This is his level of rationale when he finally does notice you. So we can just, not necessarily just say callously skip this one. We can say this is an understood field in Scientology. It is not an economically feasible field at this time. Lack of quarters, lack of enough practitioners, that sort of thing. It's a problem that we just would rather let drift a bit, because certainly they're not going to get any different, because no change is their motto. And you can just let them cook on the back burner for the next few years, and somebody can get a program out and we'll take care of them. They'll still be there. Or they would have kicked off and picked up another baby and go nuts in their next life. It's not necessarily true that they would go nuts in the next life, though. Hardly a person here hasn't got some part of the time track on which they were nuts. You know, maybe for half a lifetime or something like this, way back. It's very interesting. You get to kicking through the bank on anybody, while you'll find various real nutty, no change, totally fixed or totally dispersed tension over one whole long period of time, and then we haven't seen anything else of it for the last couple of thousand years, you know, that sort of thing. Been all right ever since. So this is not a pressure problem. The pressure problems involved here are unwilling PC and apparently willing PC who is dedicated to proving that nothing can change him. Who is still really an unwilling PC, but a special case. He comes up and gets audited just to prove to you that you can't do a thing to him. This is his total rationale. Oh, audit me, yes, yes. And hours later, why, he goes around and tells him, well, he didn't have any effect on me. Any effect on me, it didn't do a thing to me. Audit me some more. Oh, please audit me. I've got to be audited. It didn't have any effect on me at all, you know. The button he's operating on, is he has to demonstrate for his own safety and security to the world at large, and you in particular, that nothing can have any effect on him. This is supposed to discourage you. And that shows you and proves to him that he's perfectly safe. It's a horrible commentary that if you were running a clinic for low-scale cases, you would make more money by having no effect on people than by having effect on such cases. That's a horrible commentary on the society of the present time. This explains the success during the 19th century of some psychiatric and psychological practices. They didn't at any time actually have any effect on anybody, so people kept coming back because it proved it. You see, here was the most and the best. Well, now those people come around to you, the more effect you have on people, and it is fortunate for them that we now can have an effect on these people. That case is not a difficult one at that moment. And this leaves, however, then, as the biggest stumbling block, merely the unwilling, the person who has been taught thoroughly by life that no help is possible, that all help offered is phony, a hoax, so forth. That leaves that person. He gets into such organizations as the Busy Business Bureau, or he goes crusading around as, oh, sometimes it's a newspaper reporter. A lot of newspaper reporters are into this because their total effect on the public with all of their fires and murders and everything of the sort put them into neurotic category to a large degree. I'm not saying all newspaper reporters are neurotic, just all those I've ever known. The boy is in a tough spot because he has to keep producing news on an outflow which will shock or have a total effect on others. And this is the modern reporter. And he does that very long, and he gets a fixation of no effect on self. And if you say you can have an effect on people, that's the first thing he must expose. See, because he has to prove to the world at large that nothing can have an effect on him. That's why you get that funny phenomenon. Actually, the opinion of reporters does not either mold nor establish nor reflect public opinion. Newspapers would just die if that widely became known, but they do not really influence public opinion at all. The public believes what it will. Every once in a while, some newspaper, some Time magazine, or some other sheet, yellow journalism, comes out and says, this great actress who has only had 5 or 6 illegitimate children is now returning in triumph to the world at large, and all her readers write in and say, cancel my subscription. And this takes loose-thinking fellows and makes them suddenly say, what? My postulate didn't stick. And they tear up the rug and the desk and so forth because they didn't mold public opinion. As a matter of fact, they never mold public opinion. Once in a while, they find that out. They tried to shove somebody with an unsavory, second-dynamic reputation down the throats of the public, and the public threw up. You get the idea. And the public just didn't buy this one. There is the essence of the situation. Now, here's your no-effect situation. But that goes around in the society and is made public at every hand. They keep saying everybody who tries to help anybody is bad. Because if they really could help anybody, they'd have an effect on us, and that's impossible. If anybody had an effect on us, it'd kill us, because that's what we're trying to do to other people. Now, there's your majority. It's an unfortunate fact. I wouldn't even make a guess at the actual percentage, but it must be fairly high. However, it leaves a very respectable percentage of people who can be helped and who will accept help. And the plan of clearing, you would think, would be best if it started this way. The plan of clearing would be best started, of course, at the lowest cases in the society, and then finishing them up, would go to work on the next lowest cases and finish them up, and then would go to work on the next lowest cases and finish... No. Just because there is an evolutionary pattern for the deterioration or dwindling spiral of cases is no reason why it has to be backtracked with the society as a whole on the third or fourth dynamic. You do not have to pick up the roughest cases before you can pick up the easier cases. In other words, why Q&A with the fact of worsening cases? Why Q&A with it? Why not pick up the cases that are willing to be helped and are willing to help, enlarge that sphere, and leave the others over to some other activity or time? That's much more workable. But every now and then you have somebody who does a total Q&A, a total duplication of the actual time track, and they think, well, to do a lot of good, we have to pick up the worst cases. Matter of fact, 19th century psychotherapies made that consistent and continual mistake and actually never really got any place. They really never did. All they did was teach the world that psychotherapy existed. Now, if that's getting someplace, well, that's fine, because we're profiting from it. The world does know that such a thing as mental health exists, see? That people do know that there is such a thing as a practitioner, and that mental treatment can occur, and that sort of thing, you know. And that they did far better publicity than they did action, and it's fortunate for this public belief that these things exist that we came along and that we're here, because we're the first people that could fulfill this widespread public belief that you can do something about it. That's a good thing. But they got into the long, deep end of the track and started treating psychoses and all that sort of thing. It's interesting that today the definition of a psychiatrist is one who treats the insane. Isn't that an interesting definition? That's one who treats the insane. Now, that's silly, because definition also of a psychoanalyst is one who treats the neurotic. Get the idea? They're starting way down there in the basement someplace, thinking that this is the proper place to start so that you roll the thing upwards. Or maybe they're Q&A-ing with going toward what's baddest, finding the wrongest thing they can find and charging it. Well, that's sort of silly, too, because if you find the wrongest thing you can find with a PC and use that immediately and abruptly and instantly, you're liable to spatter him all over the walls. Or not get any place. It's just totally unreal to him. Like the fellow I've talked about in other times and places. Came in on crutches and many, many hours of processing later found out he had bad legs. Is one of the biggest cognitions he ever had. Everybody else could see them, but he couldn't. And that's typical of sinners. Most sinners, using Christian nomenclature, most sinners are the last people to recognize that they themselves sin. And it was not unusual to find some Christian minister damning and screaming up and down the land about some practice and other, such as drinking, you know, to discover that actually every night why he went down in the basement and got dead drunk, you see. And the whole thing got an hypocritical flair. He was attacking something because it was very bad, and then he was doing it all the time. He saw really nothing terribly irrational in it, but other people did. Now, what everybody misses about this hypocrite is that he himself does not know that he drinks. He never realized it, you see. Had never had any realization of his own alcoholic frenzies. Never called to his attention. It's kind of somebody else does that. And it's he himself who militates against alcohol. But that fellow drinks. That's another person. It's very remarkable to get a murderer or somebody like that sometime, find out that he doesn't know he's committed a murder. The public at large is the only one educated by hanging, for instance. The murderer's never educated by hanging. He never did anything. One of the worst murderers of all time, Pretty Boy Floyd. Somebody stuck his nose in the car and was a cop, and this criminal simply killed him. I mean, I don't even think there was any arrest or anything else intended. And the criminal killed him. And later on told reporters that he was just an honest boy, but a good boy trying to get along. And didn't seem to have any knowledge or recollection of having murdered anybody. Isn't that an interesting thing? What was wrong with him is that he murdered people. But he never knew it. He didn't know this. Well, a practitioner will discover this continually and consistently, that he can sit in the auditing chair and look at the preclear and know everything that's wrong with the preclear. The preclear never finds it out except through auditing. And it's rather remarkable to have a PC suddenly say, you know, I just realized something. You know, my nose twitches all the time. Well, hell, we knew his nose twitched for the last 10 years, you see. But his nose twitched all the time. Big cognition. In other words, the reality of the person is not up to the actuality of his existence. His own ability, or ability to conceive reality, or his own concept of reality, is less than the actuality of his fundamental traits and behaviors. This is rather consistent. And why is it that way? That's because these things have overwhelmed him. And if he'd recognized the reality of them when they overwhelmed him, they would have as-is before they reached him. So everything that has overwhelmed a PC could be said to be, at first, to be unreal to him. So naturally, you have the fellow who drinks privately, never finding out about it until one day he gets processed and sitting there and he's running created drunkard. All of a sudden, after an hour or so, he looks up and he says, old time, not used process, but he looks up and he says, I drink. And the auditor generally takes that this fellow's gotten up to a point where he can admit it. That's what the auditor generally thinks. Actually, what's occurred is he's just found it out. It's quite amazing. He's a little bit amazed about this. He drinks. Now, anything that a person takes total responsibility for does not worry him. But that thing for which a person is totally irresponsible eats him. So those things for which a person's totally irresponsible, he doesn't even know. He has no responsibility even for knowing it. He does them, but he's not responsible for them. And so he doesn't know about it. Hence we get this phenomenon of an individual suddenly discovering his own wrongnesses, which are totally apparent to the auditor. Now as we start along this line, we should recognize that the easiest course to take in the practice of clearing is to take those people who are willing to sit still and who wish to be cleared, whether or not to prove that it has no effects on them or not. We don't care about that boundary line because we can trigger this case too now. You might say, auditor, help the fellow who sits still long enough to be audited today, because something's going to happen. Something certainly is going to happen. The auditor knows his business at all, and if he's up on what he's doing at all, why, he's certainly going to have something happen with his case. Now, if this is true, as I think you will see, and it's not just propaganda, it's not false hope and all that sort of thing, then all you have to do is classify as pre-clear all those people who would be or are, you know, who would be, they don't know about it yet, but who would be willing to be audited, and all those people who know knowing something about it are willing to be audited. If you just take all of those and classify them as pre-clears, even though they are in a minority, you find out that the easiest course is to pick them up. They are not the worst off. They still know they can be improved. Their reality is capable of realizing that something is wrong. They still have reality on it, you see. And getting those people up along the line then gives you more people and more practitioner hours with which to deal with the next strata that should be hit, which are the unwilling ones who won't sit still, and they take a little harder cracking because they are actually totally irresponsible for their own difficulties. And that's actually what characterizes the unwilling case. He cannot even take enough responsibility for his difficulties to start to do anything about them. Now, if that isn't a commentary, I never heard one. This fellow who says, well, that's for other people. I always regarded this, you know, yes, a favor, that sort of thing, and so on. But, I'd never go in for anything like that myself, and so forth. Well, what's he saying? What's he saying? He's just saying, I have no responsibility for the things that are wrong with me, and I have no willingness or desire to make any of them right because I don't even know about them. That's what he's saying. And with what amazement one day he is suddenly overtaken with some disease or illness. How'd I ever get this? Well, it must be in germ form, and it must have floated through the air. That's a good theory. I'm not responsible for the air, things that float through them, so I must be totally sick, and all of my illness, all of it is totally traceable to disease. Thus we get the popularity of disease. Because disease is described today by a number of ready-made descriptions, all of which add up to irresponsibility. My old pal, Louis Pasteur, he's a great boy. He was more interested in getting grapes to ferment than he was anything else. But his name inevitably got connected with disease. And he has been one, too. But anyhow, this fellow gives us a theory for which nobody's responsible. All right, that's great. So there is such a thing as a bug. All right, let's just say there is such a thing as a bug. Well, good, such a thing as a bug. And, well, how did it get there? Well, it floated through the air. Well, that's not good enough. Give you a yellow fever. With what great triumph the United States Army marched upon Cuba and conquered yellow fever. To the last mosquito. And in school textbooks, still extant, you will find this statement. And after General Leonard Wood finished up his campaign against yellow fever, there was not enough yellow fever virus on Earth to have harmed a single dog. Well, there might not have been very much, but how come shortly afterwards, shortly in terms of evolutionary time, 35, 40, 50 years, do we find yellow fever rampant throughout the highlands, first of South America? The highlands, not the swamps now, the highlands of South America and the highlands of Africa. Africa, new places. And with great enthusiasm, they went in with the exact same tests and exact same equipment and exact same everything to isolate what insect was now carrying this. And they found no insects were carrying it, only it is. Now, they did develop a serum for it, and very few people who take the serum die from it. There have been people taking the serum that didn't get killed by it, by the serum. People go sailing around through these areas, but nobody's found where this yellow fever is coming from yet. Now, what's this all about? It evidently is no longer insect carried or something of this sort. There we take people and we shoot them full of penicillin and we give more penicillin and more penicillin. Well, it's perfectly all right. I'm very glad that there is such a thing as penicillin. It's fine. It's something that does put the brakes on something. But I'm not at all satisfied that it's putting the brakes on what they say it's putting the brakes on. In other words, I don't think this is a buttoned-up subject, this bacteriology. I think it stopped a lot of people thinking because they could then be, what? Totally irresponsible for it. And they could just sail through the air and so forth. Well, these things beef up, and there must be some sector that Scientologists never got into in the field of colds or flu. There must be something, some sector of all of this, where they are not cause. Now, as far as common colds and ordinary illness in this character, Scientologists are less sick than anybody on Earth today per capita. Well, all of a sudden, just in the last winter, a lot of people got flu. Well, I don't know. We evidently didn't have this one taped. Now, remember that we didn't have this particular one taped didn't mean we didn't have the modus operandi tape to tape it if we'd gotten in on it quick enough. You get the idea? It just braced us up and said, well, we're not so smart after all. There's still something more to know. Cough, cough, wheeze, wheeze. But so far, every type of illness, a bacteriological illness, has changed under auditing. I won't say that it has surrendered. I won't say that it has always gotten better, but it has certainly altered under auditing. We've made a few colossal blunders here and there, as how could we fail to do with as many cases as we handle. But one person got all cured up of something and then unfortunately died of tuberculosis. There was something else going on, you see, and it was never even suspected. But the thing that was going on, that was obvious, was also obviously cured. And other things have happened along this line. Now, this is not a failure of Scientology. This is a failure to spot the thing for which the person was most irresponsible. Those are diagnostic or assessment failures. I'm not putting the blame on anybody else, because I tell you frankly that I have, since some of these things happened, worked very, very hard along this line and been developing better diagnostic and assessment lines. What thing is the individual failing to be causative toward? What things is the individual the effect of to such a degree that he doesn't even know they're there anymore? Now, how could you describe disease except as something you don't even know if it's there? Well, naturally, you don't get a cold for days, you see, and then it breaks out and so on. We're also facing today a toughening up situation, in that we're actually being bombarded with radiation rather heavily, with strontium-90 and other things of this character. And we've simply got to make progress faster than our progress is knocked down. We're up against a rather tough run right at this particular time. And where all other medical science is getting less and less results, we're getting more and more results, you see. So there is hope along this line. Say that you've got it all wrapped up, though, is to make this rather ridiculous statement, that you have now classified every single item, object, kind, type, condition, and circumstance and significance of which a thetan could be an effect. That's what you have to say when you've got it all wrapped up. Oh, that's a catalog. Now, to know how it's done and to know how to reverse the flow is the important thing to know, and we know that. Now, this leaves only one possible error. We assess or diagnose the wrong item. So you make an improper diagnosis. Well, you can lose more auditing time with improper diagnosis. You can make an assessment, and the PC's making some sort of a slow gain, and so on. He's plugging along, and he assures you he's getting better. He's getting better. He doesn't apparently get anywhere. Anywhere at all. And then maybe 75 hours later, he finally comes through on this particular one. Wow. You get rid of that button. Then you say, well, that was the button necessary to resolve the case, and we've got that thing flat. Now we get a hold of another button. You find a button that's red hot, and it clears right up. It only takes a few hours, utterly alters the case, and so forth. And then it may or may not be true that that button was available to run in the first place. It may or may not be true. Maybe it ran so fast because you'd already flattened another one. And maybe the other one ran so slow just because you were a knucklehead. You see, there's the points of judgment. Now, to say you've got it all wrapped up is, however, to make this ridiculous statement that you have a total classification that everything that ever could have overwhelmed anybody. If you don't believe there's some strange things that could overwhelm people, read science fiction sometime. It's all off the backtrack. Nearly all science fiction has some sort of a recombination of whole track material. In the first place, the writer wouldn't have conceived all of it, whole cloth. Not that he isn't capable of doing so, but he doesn't ordinarily. And the reader couldn't have possibly found that much agreement with it if it hadn't already happened. Only this practically doesn't occur to anyone. Now, if we look at the different types of societies as laid before us in science fiction, as possible types of societies, we see that they're all manner of things that could be either at cause point or at effect point. All manner of things. Now, to pick them out, to do it expertly, to do it slippily, and then to audit it well, is, of course, to bail out the PC. And the actual practice of clearing, then, is the reversal of items, conditions, objects, terminals, ideas, circumstances, experiences, which have overwhelmed the individual, and reverse the cause-effect ratio by auditing. Well, of course, it's easiest to do that with a person who's already being slightly causative. He's being causative enough to realize that he probably ought to do something about it. You can take that person, then you can do something with him. When you've done that, you have a tremendously enlarged number of people fighting on your side. All right, so your next target would possibly be the unwilling ones. And the way you handle those is very simple. You get the help button running and straighten that up one way or the other. Possibly clear the no effect on them, get them be responsible for something, and then move them up into the same category as you found the other people in the first place, and then clear them on from there. The practice of clearing must and does include the selection of PCs. And if you don't look at this frankly, you're in for a lot of grief. If you make the rather dull statement that the perfect process would on one shot clear everybody, you've just made a dull statement. In the first place, when you say everybody, you probably mean anybody who would sit still and be audited. But you've already excluded the majority of the human race. So it'd at least take another process to get them to sit still and be audited, right? And then the unwilling and the unaware, the unconscious, you might say, and the unaware psychotic, both totally unwilling, are also unconscious. You have to run another set and type of processes on those to get them awake enough to be unwilling. You see? Now you could take off from there merely with an unwilling person. He's awake now. He's merely unwilling. Now you can cure his unwillingness to be audited and move him on up the line to somebody who was willing to be audited, and you would again shift your process type and carry him on up to a point of where he had a gain in responsibility or reality. It'd be impossible to actually gain one without gaining the other on these two. Responsibility and reality go hand in hand. They are much of the same thing. Person expresses irresponsibility by conceiving the unreality. He expresses his irresponsibility towards something by conceiving an unreality about it. That's why some, quote, statesmen come up with such wonderful, quote, solutions, unquote, that are so awfully unreal, because they simply are not being responsible for it. The person not in charge of something, or the person who is actually incapable of being responsible for something, can come up with some of the weirdest solutions you ever heard of. They're really marvelous solutions. They sound so good. They sound so real. They sound so logical. But the person isn't responsible for them, so therefore the reality of the problem escapes him. It isn't it that he's in there, it's just he's not being responsible for it. Similarly, a person totally outside of a problem, but willing to take responsibility for it, can actually give you quite real solutions for it. You see? Doesn't mean that a person who is outside of a problem, doesn't know all the details, can't solve the problem. That's not true. You see? But a person to solve a problem does have to take responsibility for the problem. Well, similarly, to take responsibility for something, you should have some clue what it is. And most of the work in Dianetics was solely to find out what we were trying to take some responsibility for, because up to that time, there were no records as to what was there. We had to find out what was there in order to do something for it, but of course, to start to find out meant that we had to originate, at the beginning, some responsibility for what was there, even though we didn't know what was there. Some responsibility had to exist then. Some, before anything could happen. Therefore, there may be different horsepowers of Thetans. There may be great differences in native state, one person to another. People are not all equal, by a long way, unless they're totally insane. That's not a commentary saying that everybody in a democracy is insane. They just tend to be so. Because of the denification of equality. It's an artificial through which they have to struggle. It's not true that some people are better than others. It has nothing to do with it at all. Some people are, however, more able than others in certain lines. Now, as you clear these people up along the line, you get what? You get greater and greater responsibility, greater and greater potential responsibility. And therefore, if you can take a man who already has some responsibility for something and improve it and increase it, you've made it. But if you take two people, neither one desiring any responsibility for the other one, both of them unwilling to help each other and try to get them to do something, you just wind up with a catfight. So obviously the road out, the tag still showing in this society, is quite an obvious one. You simply take the people who are willing to be audited and apply those processes capable of clearing them. And those processes that are capable of clearing them are simply those processes which increase at once their reality and their responsibility. If a process doesn't increase responsibility, it won't increase anybody's reality. All you have to do is go on from the point of willingness to a point of greater and greater willingness. And that willingness is directly expressed by greater responsibility, greater reality. And if you have a few people, maybe only a few hundred thousand throughout the world, who are willing to take responsibility for its ills and diseases, I'm afraid that no psychotic could ever stand against them. It's only when you're half sick that a psycho can knock you down. The practice of clearing, then, requires, as its first requisite, the selection of pre-clears, and as second requisite, the careful and accurate assessment and diagnosis of cases, and as its third requisite, a very broad program which carries it forward with the greatest possible efficiency. Thank you.